Welcome back to our cosmology seminar, and we've been kind of on hiatus for a while. But Prabhupada Hassan is visiting us, and he offered to give a seminar anonymously. So let me just do a quick introduction. Prabhupada did his master's at Sharif University in Tehran, then his PhD in Geneva with Martin Kunz, and is now a postdoc at University of Oslo with David Mata. He's specialized in alternatives to lambda CDM and numerical simulations involving modified gravity and dark energy. And he's going to tell us about some of his adventures in that field. Oh yeah, I should mention, Prabhupada is going to be here for 3 weeks now, or two more weeks?
Two more weeks.
And he's also a visitor at McGill. So hopefully we're going to see more of him.
Okay. Yeah, thanks. So I think there is another feature. It doesn't appear in my laptop.
Yeah.
Okay, so let it be there or? Yeah, as I said, I would like to especially thank Kanzal and Nirish for their hospitality, and I'm so glad to be here. Today I'll be talking about characterizing the nonlinear evolution of dark energy models. I know it might be far from some of your field of research, but I try to keep it such that we understand. So please feel free to stop me whenever you have a question.
Another question. Do you have a microphone?
I think there is a microphone here. You mean microphone for you or for the participants?
You could put it on if you want.
He didn't tell me, but okay, I can do that.
Yeah.
So. So.
If you move around,
there would be no noise. Okay. Can you hear me well? Maybe somebody.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. So that this talk is based on these publications that I've been working on during past years. I tried to give you some information from some of them, but the most important ones are the recent ones. This is in collaboration with a lot of group of people from mathematics, numerics, EFTN, et cetera. This idea was started by Martin Kunz and Filippo Vernizzi, where they wanted to implement effectively theory of dark energy in embodied simulations. And then I've got a lot of help from Julian Adamek, who was the main developer of G-evolution relativistic embodied code. WW helped us a lot. And then it has become a mathematics problem, which we got help from Jean-Pierre, Pinchet, Peter, and Hatem. And also on the other side of the project, to see what happens in the covariant K-essence theories, we got help from Camille, Ruth, Alex. And also for the embodied simulation part, we need to initialize with from the Boltzmann codes, who Miguel, Emilio, and Ignacy are specialized. All right, so let me begin with, the outline of my talk would be as follows. First, I will give a brief introduction of about dark energy modified gravity, and I will introduce the EFT of dark energy, and what are the problems we are facing. And then I will briefly introduce the K-evolution embodied code, which I developed in my PhD. And I'll be talking about nonlinear instabilities appearing in the K-essence theories, which we can, in principle, study only through embodied codes, through nonlinear analysis. All right, so let's begin with the idea of accelerating expansion of the universe. I know all of you know, but it's been started around 20 years ago by supernovae observations. This is a Hubble diagram. This is a figure from 1999. And what cosmologists found that, in fact, when you plot the Hubble diagram, you see that at larger distances, here is the redshift, at larger redshifts, the objects are appearing to be systematically fainter. And this has led us to find out that the universe is accelerating in the late time. Later on, through the observation of the CMB, of course, indirectly, and the large-scale structure, we found that there should be this late-time accelerating expansion phase in the universe. And what we have now, what we know about this component is that its energy budget is around 70% of the universe today. And there are two important facts which I'll be using in my presentation. First, it has to act opposite to gravity at large scales. It doesn't necessarily is true at smaller scales. And the second fact is that it doesn't seem to cluster strongly in small scales, like dark matter, for example. Right. So in fact, from theoretical point of view, we know that normal matter cannot do that for us. If we look at the Poisson equation, it tells us that whenever we have matter over density, there will be a potential well where the objects could fall in. And from the theory, by adding a constant in principle, you can get this accelerating expansion. I mean, in practice, it would be like the galaxies have their potential wells, and on top of everything, we add a homogeneous constant, which makes things recede from each other. Of course, we know that the correct theory of relativity is general relativity, and in the same thing, the same notion, we can have in the GR by adding this lambda term. So you can accept that, okay, there is a constant in nature, which is called lambda, and we add it. But on the other hand, no one stops you to be considering this general scalar field. For example, you can, in principle, think of a scalar field adding to the Einstein's equations, where makes things recede from each other in the late time. You have to just tune the parameters a bit. I mean, not very much tuning, but so you need to set up the initial conditions correctly and et cetera. So what it means is that there is a fluid where in the late time we get the accelerating expansion, and this is called dark energy. But during past years, in fact, people have come up with a lot of ideas by changing left-hand side or right-hand side of Einstein's equations. So historically, if you change right-hand side, it's being called dark energy, or if you change left-hand side, people call it modified gravity. But this is not a very good distinguishing, because in principle, you can show that these two modifications are conformally equivalent. So there is a transformation you can introduce to convert a modified gravity into a dark energy. So when I say modified gravity or dark energy, they are basically the same, so I don't distinguish them. So as I said, there are many theories of modified gravity and dark energy. I'm sure you have heard a lot of them, and you know a lot about them. But the thing is the question is there any way to unify them, to consider as many possible class of modified gravity theories or dark energy theories? And the answer is yes, through the effective theory framework. And in fact, the reason that effective theory framework works very well is that it's an approximative framework. I mean, the idea is that we don't care about small details of a certain theory. Instead, we are caring about large scale behavior or low energy limit. So for example, I mean, super small, I didn't want to look at it. I'll just tell you the idea of, assume you have a covariant theory, which is the dark energy candidate. For example, here you have a Horn-Desky theory, L2 is KSNs, L3 is KGB, and et cetera. In principle, to study these models, you need to define the function to obtain the equations and solve the equations to see what happens. However, in the EFT approach, instead you are interested in the small scalar field limit, basically, in the EFT of dark energy. And you can show that it can be connected to covariant theories through the minimal number of parameters. I mean, for a given EFT parameters, you can find, in principle, a covariant theory correspondence. And the main advantage is that we can constrain these parameters through observation. So it's you can use the minimal number of parameters to constrain modified gravity theories. I mean, of course, this relation is not very clear. So for a given EFT parameters, it's not clear whether a well-defined covariance theory exists, and these kind of questions will raise, but we don't care at the moment. All right, so the main topic of my talk is about K-essence, the K-essence action. I mean, we have Hilbert Einstein action, and the K-essence action is basically a general function of kinetic term and the scalar field. Maybe I can show it here. So in principle, in the EFT language, in order to write down this action in the EFT language, we choose a unitary gauge. You will see later why EFT language is actually better in the perturbative expansion as well. So we choose time such that it coincides with the time constant, field constant hypersurfaces. So the perturbation of a scalar field completely vanishes. And what we end up is an action which is described by geometric quantities. For the K-essence, the only geometric quantity we need is delta G naught naught. But if you had another theories like KGB and et cetera, we have extrinsic curvature on these 3D hypersurfaces and et cetera. It's an important question up to what order we have to expand this action. I mean, I know Ghazal was working on this problem from the inflationary side. But this is an important for us because we want to have nonlinear dark energy equations. So, and in principle, the equivalence between this action and this action, in principle, is up to infinite limits. So you have to, the other higher order terms could be in principle important for some theories of K-essence. However,
Yeah.
In principle, yes. Yeah, I will discuss that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is basically choosing the unitary gauge, where we remove the scalar field perturbations. And so, in order to restore the general covariance, we need to introduce a scalar field. So the time diffeomorphism is like this, and the new scalar field is introduced via the so-called Stokelberg trick. And basically, this procedure makes this framework very interesting because you first decide up to what order you want to write down the action, and then somehow the perturbations are controlled by this pi, which is the scalar field perturbations. I mean, especially for the case that I'm going to consider for the purpose of embodied simulations. And then what we have is an action which the Stokelberg trick is done. And okay, there is no point here, but just to see that we have kept everything up to delta G not squared. To obtain the equations,
Well, there's no power count.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Yeah, that depends. That may depend on particular symmetries, but in principle, that's
fixed. Exactly. So I have a slide for that. It's actually this slide. So I will tell you exactly what are the perturbative rules.
Because in inflation, one thing that helps us a lot is the epsilon parameter is a small.
Exactly.
To have that decoupling the limit or taking the epsilon to as a small parameter.
Right.
In dark energy, you don't have that, so you have additional terms. And
mm-hmm. So the in universe or in the late time, I mean, in less large scale structure, the small parameter smallness is controlled by phi, gravitational potential. Of course, we won't get all the interesting physics like black holes and etc. But for the large scale structure is enough. So I will show you exactly what it means. So the evolution of perturbations is obtained by varying the action with respect to delta G mu nu. And then the scalar field evolution is obtained by variation of the action with respect to a scalar field. The perturbative scheme we consider is short, we call it short wave correction. So the short wave corrections are considered or weak field regime. And it tells us immediately that it is enough. I mean, by looking at the differential equations, it's consistent to consider the scale effect perturbations and it's their time derivatives to be small. However, for each special derivative we are introducing, we need to increase the importance of that term. The reason is we know from the Poisson equation in cosmology that the Laplace of potential is basically goes like the density, and density can go become very large, while the potentials are always small. So this is the idea we have, and maybe I have to say that this is basically one of the main difficulties, because it tells us first up to what order we have to expand the action, and up to what order we have to keep the Schutte-Kellberg trick. I mean, we have to keep the equations. Yes, that's true. The non-relativistic limit in the sense that you mean by this, right? The pi double prime can get large, yes. I think the differences in Pn, we expand based on the speed. But here is fields that we are expanding based on.
Pi is like potential.
Pi, yeah. I mean, the same rule applies for the gravitational potential. So you can substitute them for the gravitational potential.
Yeah. So that will work on upper right. You are both zero.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's true.
How do you match? I mean, you have to match to upper right. In the initial condition. You have to have that.
Yeah. The initial conditions are we obtain from a high class, which is a linear, I mean, the full linear equation is solved. So it's basically matched already. It's a solution of an equation. Yeah. And also important point is that these are going to be applied only at low redshift, from redshift 100 to redshift 0. It's not, I mean, we are not very much interested in super horizon scales.
And the
nonlinearity,
right?
In nonlinearity. Yeah. So if I want to say what objects we are interested in is the objects that where Wakefield regime or Wakefield approximation can be applied to, like even the sun lies in this regime and galaxies, superclusters, and a large scale structure basically.
Why did I apply a
tensor minus 12? I wrote it. I mean, I had this from a long time ago presentation, but I think.
Like 10 to the minus 4, I think.
Yeah, maybe I made a mistake. I don't know.
300 kilometers per second, 10 to the minus 6. So it's the same as actually. It's bigger than the sun. The sun is actually the same as the sun.
I'm not sure, actually. Okay. So I have to take a look at this. But yeah, anyway, it's small. It's like, I don't remember how. Maybe I used the real theorem. Or maybe I made a mistake.
Yeah, I think escape velocity from the galaxy and from the sun are the same roughly.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I don't remember the numbers honestly, but I will take a look at. So just, I mean, even 10 to the minus 6 is small gravitational potential, I agree. So, but on the other hand, maybe these numbers are wrong. But anyway, we so it means that in this perturbative scheme, which is applied to gravitational potential and also scalar fields, we won't have neutron stars, black holes. So we completely forget about them. What we have control in our codes, such that if there will be a region with a strong field regime, so we just stop the code. In principle, it is possible. Just to mention that if we have just imagine we have an equation like this for the gravitational potential. I mean, I had to, this is just for an example, it's not a real equation. Just to say that in principle, we remove all the second order terms in the potentials, but we keep this, although it's a third order term in the potential, but because of the number of the special derivatives, we keep it as a short wave correction. Okay. So now, please.
So isn't there a dimension? Is there not a dimensionful coefficient in front of some of these?
Why?
Like there's four spatial derivatives and two time derivatives, so phi and phi are both dimensional.
I think, okay, it's because we consider c equal to 1.
What is the dimension of pi?
So this is just an equation. It's not a real equation. Okay. Yeah, maybe I just didn't consider, but pi is has unit of time because it's a perturbation on constant time. So there should be h naught, for example, here, h naught here, and here it's there should be c only, I think I can imagine, because phi is dimensionless. You have two derivatives. You have like six special derivatives on the denominator, so you have to introduce. Does that answer? Or
maybe a different way of asking my question is just typically in these theories with more derivatives, there's some strong coupling scale associated with this dimensionful coefficients, and that's at some length scale below which we're not really sure that this mm-hmm. is going to work, right?
Mm-hmm.
So not just the small supply, but there's a problem.
Right. I think the EFT scale would be set by something like that, H naught. I don't remember exactly, but H naught squared M Planck, something like that. So I agree that there should be a scale, but it's not easy to see it at the level of equations. This I don't
have those mass.
The mass is M Planck, right?
Coefficient that come up in it.
Yeah, this M Planck squared.
M2, like this thing.
Where is it?
Yeah, this.
It's the EFT parameter.
Show up in these coefficients too, because they are dimensional, right?
I'm not okay.
Yeah, I think I have two questions.
Yeah. Okay.
First of all, what is the numerical value?
I don't remember exactly. I think it's 10 to the minus 13 electron volts, something like that. No, it should be very small. I think so, because otherwise the EFT couldn't be applied. All the work is nonsense.
Yeah, and the number one, so the next line, you have this term with the illustration with more space derivatives.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you know that? And there are no terms with even more.
Yeah, yes.
Looks like according to your county rule, they can be even more.
Yes, that's true. For general theory, yes, but not for KSS. For KSS, you can prove that it's enough to keep the terms up to third order. And you can really count the number of derivatives being introduced, and you can show that first. The action is needed to just expand up to this order. And the Stückelberg trick, you need to do it up to third order, and that's it. But for a general theory, yes, in principle, it's not clear that you can truncate.
Yeah, but what's the ideal group here? So can you have grad phi, grad square phi to the fourth?
No, because at the level of action, if you go to higher order, delta G naught naught is the gravitational potential. And you introduce like phi cube term. And in the equations, it would lead to a second order like phi squared, which is ignored in our equations. That's the thing. If in the action you had like extrinsic curvature, yes, you could
but somewhere you have the four county rule that every gradient actually reduces the order, right?
Yeah.
So grad square pi u was a further epsilon zero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So grad square pi to the cube is the same as grad square pi to the fourth.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you do then? fields.
No, they don't appear in this theory. They don't appear. And that's the thing. If you have, instead of P of X phi, KGB, for example, where you have box phi, yes, it appears. And then you have to define a cutoff and say, okay, we throw it.
The one that you set up is coming from KSN. So the
yes.
tools and everything are coming already at the other terms. They have matched
after.
Yeah, it's EFD of KSN, basically, yeah. Yeah, for the EFD of other covariance theories, I mean, we have done the covariance theories, but I'm talking today only about the KSNs, because for the KGB, for example, it would be more complicated. So we need to go to higher order, as you said, to have all the terms being included. And so I didn't want to discuss.
No, that's really being the EFD of KSNs, that's not really
What's okay?
Because EFT is you would make a the rules and good old terms which are not subred, but good old terms which are subred by this power counting, and then maybe take the direction of other terms which are subred by the power counting. Yeah. Okay, the old. Yeah. Here you are saying you're restricted to something because the, nothing else appears from original variant action. So it sounds like more you're so taking this covariant action and just okay for the purpose of another simulation making another green. But
yes. Otherwise,
I think yes, so yeah, it's almost correct. But the thing is, okay. The reason we chose, yeah, that's true. I mean, you can in principle see it like basically if you you can, I mean, just put it because I guess some people will. So in principle, yeah, you could expand the scalar field and the kinetic term and insert it into this function and then just Taylor expand the function, get the equations of motion. Yeah, that is true. But why we chose EFT? Because, I mean, by EFT, I mean this formalism, because it was easier to count for us to the number of derivatives being introduced.
Mm.
At least, if, right. Yeah. Okay, so let me just go ahead. Okay, so the K-evolution embodied code, which is developed based on G-evolution, it's a relativistic embodied code, meaning we've solved the full Einstein's equations up to in the weak field regime, and 6 degrees of metric degrees of freedom are computed in Poisson gauge, and in K-evolution we have KSN scalar field as well. And these are the 6 degrees of freedom. We have 2 potentials in the Poisson gauge and 2 vector degree of freedom and 2 tensor.
The Einstein equation is linear in this.
This
potential, but
it's not linear in the field. So it's linear in both potential and a scalar field, but it's nonlinear in the Laplace of them. So matter can go nonlinear, basically.
Put that in your pocket.
That's right. Okay. Yeah, but the important point is that the background should be close to FLRW. Otherwise, we just stop the code. And there are embodied particles going around by solving geodesic equations, and those embodied particles could be cerium, neutrinos, or photons, because it's a relativistic code. In principle, we can have relativistic particles as well in the code. Okay, so basically this was an introduction, and in the rest of my talk I'll be talking about 2 different limits of KSNs. One when we have very small speed up sound, or basically smaller than 10 to the minus 4.7, and when we have large speed up sound. by large, we don't consider CSS squared equal to one because it's an uninteresting case. Plus, our EFD expansion also do not allow us to do that. In the first part, I'll be talking about large speed up sound.
Is there a particular reason for the 4.7 number, or is that just a number?
Yeah, it's an experiment we did to find out this number. In fact, for the small speed of sound, smaller speed of sound than to the minus 4.7, the KSS blows up. So the scale effect goes to infinity in a finite time in our universe evolution. That's why, because we wanted to study this case separately and understand what's happening. So I'm just separate.
Question. So is the sound speed and the equation state parameter are totally decoupled in this model?
Not totally decoupled. The question of state mainly, the question of state controls clustering a bit. But for this nonlinear instability we see, the question of state doesn't do much. But the question is very important because 1 plus W is what is coupled to matter. So basically, how much KSS would impact matter depends on the 1 plus W. Yeah. So in the sense of instability, yes, it's some decoupled. Not precisely, but up to the level we studied. Minus 0.9. Yeah. And CA squared, which is the adiabatic speed of sound, defined by, because we take it W, because W prime, we consider it to be zero. So this is the parameterization we have.
The minus 0.9, that's just a choice you have to make to do the simulation, or is there a particular motivation for that number, or?
The motivation is because observations show that the W should be very close to minus one. And on the other hand, we don't want to consider minus one because it seems that we have cosmological constant, so there will be no effect of KSS. That's why we choose a bit, yeah.
Can't have W minus one and also dynamics in your KSS. So the sound speed and W are coupled in such a way that you're not allowed to choose minus one.
I think.
Okay. Okay. If you're doing this thing, one has zero, and
yeah, exactly. So in the EFD approach, you can have that, and you get instability for a small CS squared. But yes, doesn't do anything on the matter evolution. As anyway, said, yeah. So what we have basically from K evolution is okay. On one, we have many components, but I'm showing two of them. Here you have density of K essence and density of matter from redshift 100, which everything is smooth. And so what happens is the structures start to form. We know that the K essence structure should be much smaller. I mean, the density should be much less than the matter, and that's what happens in principle as well. This is a simulation for CSS squared 10 to the minus 4. And it means that the perturbations can propagate a bit. But because of matter clustering, I can just go a bit, don't have so much time. So around the, this is a very small simulation just to show what happens. So around matter structures, we will have KSS structures. And it's very interesting. It's an interesting question to ask because we have embodied simulations, we can make our universe. So it would be interesting to say, okay, what observables we have to look, we have to study in order to put constraints on the KSS theories. So this is an important question that we ask. And so we have come up with a lot of ideas because once we have made these universes, we have access to different redshift information. We have a light cone. And in principle, we can make different observables. So the first observable that you can think of, yes.
Just like the thing on the two color map plot that you showed, is it a feature of the color scale, or is it correct to understand that like the scalar field or the it sort of forms like bubbles around over densities where it's mostly flat density, or?
So you're asking about being spherical? Very much. So
sort of black regions and then regions with kind of
the black region is because the density is small. It's not, I mean, it's a feature of the color map. Yeah, you're right. So there are structures here, of course, like matter, but just to see what's happening in the most interesting part, I just chose this color bar. But you see that the maximum range of color bar is like 3, while for matter is 300. So it's like 100 less pronounced.
Think of the chaos and structure as being sort of matching the matter field, but smaller densities and like maybe a little bit smoothed out, or is that?
Yeah, it's more smoothed out. And yes, the density is much smaller on top of the matter, yeah. So the left is the K essence density. I had to explain better. And the right is matter density. So these are like structures, dark matter structures. These are like K essence structures. In the phi field, yeah.
Is that density contrast here? Or is it density contrast or density?
They are very close to each other, but it's density. I mean, this is. Yeah, it's in the units. I forgot as well. Yeah.
And there has been so for the evolution of the field, what code are you using? You are using the
K evolution. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, of course, there are metric components maps as well, because we are solving all.
Like you have a kind of hybrid object of the grid and then what and a particle.
Yeah. Particle. Yeah. It's a particle mesh embodied simulation. Yeah. Or CS squared.
The third thing we got parsec is like the horizon or where the case is like that. The thousand is a big horizon and then you go down the core to the magnitude of the megaparsec. So, I mean, these are smaller than that.
Blobs are of the order of 20 megaparsecs.
The blobs are smaller.
Yeah, there is because there is something else, and that is the because matter and K essence are also coupled, so it's not just the only K essence evolution. That's mainly because of coupling.
Sometimes the factor of two, right?
Yeah, I mean, it is that the K essence is in the potential of matter, maybe that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's maybe the color bar feature as well, because I just chose it to see here most pronounced, but yeah.
I guess it would be nice to see the profile of this comparison.
Okay. Right, that would be interesting. We haven't studied that. We studied the matter profile because this is what we can observe, but we didn't do that. That would be interesting. So, all right, so the first thing that we try to understand is about the statistics of cold dark matter particles. It's not my fault. Okay. Okay. So, which usually is obtained through the matter power spectrum. So the question would be, what's the effects being introduced from K essence or modified gravity through matter power spectrum? And also we studied the redshift space distortions because since the gravity is different, the velocities of dark matter particles are different, and it would be an interesting, I mean, these are interesting observables. Yes. I mean, modified gravity for me is like dark energy. So because you change the particle trajectory in the sense because it's coupled to KSS. Yeah, I mean, in the
first. You haven't done that. Because in principle, yeah, you know, that matter can then directly. Well, right. No, not just for
gravity. Yes, yeah. That's also. So what do you mean exactly?
Because actually, here's the question. So I have KSM sector, and then you just put particles that doesn't directly the matter. There is no direct problem. Fine.
Yeah, because the stress energy tensor is modified by KSNs, and then G mu nu is obtained when KSNs is included.
Yeah,
no, but yeah, it's in that sense, yes, it's not directly,
not direct.
But yeah, okay, I see. I didn't think like that.
Yeah, I'm curious why people don't do EFT or dark matter plasma energy.
Because dark matter is very well understood. I mean, it's much better to do it n-body simulations. What do you mean by
Yeah, I understand, but the principle that can be like the essence, the dark energy, whatever, can be very coupled. Dark matter can also have few spores.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean.
I mean, I know people have died for the neutrinos, right? And then for other dark matter particles.
Yeah.
Like people have done
it. People do it. It's called the EFT of dark energy and dark matter. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I think the one thing is it's going to be harder to justify that than the EFT because dark matter doesn't have a source of crazy stuff, plastic stuff. So I think you probably want something more than an EFT for dark matter.
True. Yeah, but at large scale, perhaps
it's more. Yes, that's true. I mean, this shell crossing, for example, we cannot have in n-body simulations. I mean, in simulations, if we take the fluid approach or EFT approach for dark matter. Yeah,
no,
but large scale.
It can be still particle, but yeah, maybe with additional interaction.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, for example, probably there's much more, but like, 10 years ago, so this means that what I don't say will be asymmetric if there is dark matter at some before. So, I mean, Kofsky and like that. And these things of that sort can, yes, that's it.
Yeah, I wonder, can you do it really like,
but the other not so, the other, I mean, the derivative.
Do it in the language of EFT, yeah.
It's just scalar theory, I think you just do. Or something, there's a scalar degree of freedom, you call that dark energy. So isn't it just scalar tensor theory? I mean,
and I want to couple that matter to scalar as well.
No, but that's it, right? You have the scalar degree of freedom, it couples to the stress tensor in some way that you get to choose. That's just scalar tensor theory, don't you?
Yeah, so something we will couple, but kind of different. I don't do that for baryonic matter because here we know that there are not much more than yet, only for dark matter. And then there'll be some segregation in baryon. And that can be also, I mean, a lot of possible signatures here.
Yeah, but isn't that like exactly the choosing frame, like Einstein and Jordan frame?
No, yeah, like it's different for baryon and dark matter. Yeah. So you can choose it for baryon. But then for dark matter, those can come to the direct coupling.
So right.
Okay. It sounds like a lot, like when we back in the day when people, the whole issue came, like Weinstein equation, Weinstein screening, and all of that. That's because dark matter, if it gets coupled, then it's not only that, but that's the sort of coupling that would come up. That's in a way dark energy coupling, right? Even if you're wondering by gravity.
Yeah.
Right. Well, anywhere of course where people couple are, because it might be an event for on galaxy scales, wouldn't that be the, and you have to, the halo and the dark matter.
Yeah, I don't remember, either, but what I know, they either would do the same coupling, dark matter environment, or no coupling.
I'm not a fan of them, but yeah, perhaps in them.
And because, yeah, I would do different.
Maybe we do it through the FMR or that sector, then it couples to matter and dark matter in the same way. You want to do it separate coupling.
Yeah, I would do separate coupling. And yes, it would have some of that, like, violation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in principle, yeah, it's possible to do that. Yeah, I agree. Okay. Yeah. So just one thing that we found out, which was interesting for this, for us, was that we should, the message that we wanted to deliver was that we shouldn't use class or Halofit to study these KSN type theories, because even in quasi-linear regime, they don't perform well. And you get like 5%, up to 5% effect from the KSNs. Oh, okay, there is a question. Yes.
I have a question about what is the difference between the modified gravity and the Einstein field equation?
By modified gravity, I mean this is my bad. I shouldn't have written modified gravity. It's KSNs, so it's basically KSNs. But my idea was general, just to say that we want to distinguish between two universes and what are the probes we can think of. Just wrote modified gravity, but what I mean is really KSNs. And by KSNs, I mean the stress energy tensor. I mean the equations that I introduced in the previous slides, like, basically these equations. This was the idea. I didn't write down the equation, sorry. I just hide it this slide because I didn't want to spend so much time on it. So how much time do I have?
I think that's good. We can wrap up in the next 5-10 minutes.
Oh, okay. So I think, okay, so I can pass.
Don't worry too much, but yeah, I suggest we don't
Okay. So, okay, I can just pass it. So the idea would be, in principle, to make Mach galaxy catalogs, and because they are much closer to what we observe. And we have also studied what happens inside the galaxy clusters through the terminal radius is a very important ruler, which we found that, in fact, KSNs can imprint some signal in this. I don't want to explain. If you had questions, please. And then the next thing would be, because we observe our universe through our past light cone in MRI simulation, we can construct light cones and see what are the imprints of dark energy and the lensing, ISW, and all the effects. And we can separate them. In observations, it's not easy to separate this, because what we have is a photon which is deflected and redshifted because of many phenomena. But in embodied simulations, you can do that. And we have done that. And just one thing is that we know that, there is around 30% effect on ISW with Schirmer angular power spectrum, which is, I would say, the most promising observations we can make to distinguish, to put constraint on KSNs. And 7% effect on convergence map. Okay. Only ISW up to redshift 3.2. So we have, from sources that come from.
What scales are we talking about?
Scales. So, okay. So, what by ISW, maybe I'm using the wrong terminology. I mean the light of distant galaxies being redshifted or blue shifted due to the decaying or growing potential wells along their trajectories. So you have this map. Each point tells us how much redshifted, how much the photons are redshifted or blue shifted. But this is a map I don't know how to connect it to observation, honestly, but this is memory simulations is perfect. So assume you have a source at redshift like 2 or whatever, and then you can observe the light. And you have
the multiples.
Yeah, we do the multiples and we plot the CL. And when we look at the CL, you see that. I didn't put it here. I just wanted to pass. I can.
30% difference is that like an enhancement or a decrement? Like, is there a direction to the difference?
Does it go further up? Or the...
Yeah, that's your multiple.
Yeah, we have to see. I'm sorry, I just have to open the paper. Okay, it's here. Is lensing, this is ISW. So on top, we have the multipoles. There's the angular power spectrum for different KSNs. This CSS squared 10 to the minus 7 is linear KSNs. We didn't consider the nonlinearities just to see what happens. But the dashed line is the linear prediction, which is only ISW. But in MBody we have Risium as well. That's why it just becomes.
And on larger scale.
So the Risium signal decreases because of dark energy, but the ISW increases, being enhanced. So this is what we see. This is better.
So I can see the enhancement relative to the dashed line. So linear theory, is it the nonlinear effects of
this one? You mean this part?
Yeah. So what enhancement are we looking at?
Yeah. So this part, this is a linear theory. It's only ISW because all the potential wells in our universe decay because of dark energy, late time excitation expansion. But in small scales, we have the small scale structure grow.
Okay.
And that's
enhancement in the ISW.
Exactly.
At nonlinear scale.
Exactly.
Yeah, compared to linear theory.
No, even in Lambda CDM.
Oh.
So it's not. So this is different things. First, compared to linear, we have a Risciama effect, is a nonlinear effect, but it is present in Lambda CDM and KSNs. But what I was saying is that if you compare, it's a very small difference being introduced because of KSNs. But if you compare Lambda CDM with KSNs, you see that the Risciama effect being suppressed because of KSNs, but the ISW increases.
Lower multipoles, it looks like the orange a little bit above the green.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like 30% effect can be introduced.
I imagine compared to like cosmic variance error bars.
Definitely, yeah. It's not observation, of course. This is a very large, very high resolution simulation. So in principle, maybe we don't have even access to those sources. It's difficult to observe. But we have a perfect universe in body simulations, basically. Okay, so let me just spend some time on the blob part, where it actually was very difficult to find out. We spent a lot of time on it. So the limit of speed, small speed of sound. What basically happens, this is just a cartoon. The colors show the scalar field, whether it has a trough or it has a potential well. It's from redshift 100 to redshift 0. And what happens is that there will be some structures forming and et cetera, but nothing interesting happens, except that at redshift, why did it stop? Okay, so at redshift, very suddenly at a very specific redshift, an instability being generated. It was very hard to also capture it, so we had to increase the time resolution of simulation to see really what happens, etc. And of course, there is no instability for larger speed of sound. To understand that, we have to look at the partial differential equation. Of course, the two first lines are very well understood. People have implemented in different codes. So we knew that it's a nonlinear instability. And by doing experiments, literally, like what chemists do, so we turned off term by term, which usually doesn't work for nonlinear PDEs because the interaction is nonlinear, really. But we did that, and we found that, okay, the problem comes from this term. So in the language of partial differential equations, this term makes the instability. And so we didn't have any idea what to do with that. So we asked mathematicians to help us. So they first simplified the equation and they said, okay, let's consider this part, because the most important linear term is this one, because it's the part which gives the wave-like behavior, and we have a nonlinear part as well. And also this was, again, a difficult problem, really difficult, apparently. I mean, we don't have any solution to this equation yet after 2 years. Maybe it's easy, we don't know, I don't know. But for the CSS squared goes to zero, apparently it's solvable. So this PD is unstable, and you can show that if you solve this partial differential equation, the curvature of the scale if it goes to infinity in finite time. And at the time, it has become a PhD thesis of Panshi, who has worked on this problem for more than 2 years now. But the pandemic happened, and he was in China. He didn't have access to his office, so he promised us to finish these papers, hopefully, sometime soon.
Yeah, I think that's the most remarkable part of your talk. The equation
hasn't
been analyzed before. Right,
right. Yeah, yeah.
The first time.
Yes, yeah. This 3D is not analyzed before.
It's the crossover between elliptic equation and a hyperbolic, right, somewhere.
Yeah, it's not linear. That's the point. It's a nonlinear PD, but still, we don't know a lot about it. And Peter and Panshi just studied for some limited initial conditions, and they studied the stability of the solution they obtained, and etc. So it has become a very interesting problem. For physicists, there is a special solution. It's R squared. It's amazing, because the coefficient of R squared in potential wells is curvature. And if you insert this into the equation, you obtain an ODE for the curvature. And this equation blows up in finite time. And it's easy to see, because it looks like Newton's second law. It's like we have Fx, the force equal to x squared, and the potential is given like x cubed. It's simpler to see that if you put a particle except in 0, 0 with velocity 0, it rolls into infinity in finite time. And the blow-up profile in time is given by 1 over tau squared. And the blow-up time, you can calculate easily, which depends on the initial curvature, et cetera. But this is not what mathematicians did. They don't like it, because these ansatz limit you to the very special initial conditions. And they didn't like it. So. Yes. Yeah. You can.
It shows up a lot. This must be
a... what? Okay. So you mean the profile? You mean tau 1 over tau squared? No, I think I cannot really comment on that, but I think it's not stable in the sense that if you add higher order corrections, for example, if you add epsilon r cubed, you see it's not stable. No, this profile only for the perfect initial conditions.
But in your generic and
body? No. No, it looks like it looks like that the curvature blows up, but it's not perfectly that. Yeah. So in 1 plus 1, if you simulate this case for CSS squared equal to 0, you see basically the same phenomena, which is somehow very close to what we have. The reason we have points is because it loses resolution. I mean, it's on a fixed mesh. It's very looks like this phenomenon happened. But the features, the mathematical features, are not perfectly the same. And so around a couple of months ago, with Jean-Pierre and Hatem, who is now in Sorbonne University, in fact, we found that there is another type of instability in this equation, because this equation couldn't be studied by Panshi. Because of this term, you cannot find easily a special solution to expand over, etc. We found that, in fact, There is another type of instability, which is called M-type instability, and you cannot avoid it at all. So there is no basically CSS squared that you can remove the instability. This is not what we see in cosmological simulations. So it was a new, let's say, 1+1D phenomena. What happens is that, again, this potential well starts to become sharper and sharper, as we expect. But as it reaches a point where the curvature is high enough, that kicks in. So this term kicks in at some point. This cannot go, this cannot dominate all the time. And what happens is that there will be two fronts which propagate to the right and left. And the speed of this minimum is smaller than the speed of maximum, and there will be a instability, which is, we call it in physics, like gradient instability, gradient catastrophe, etc. So just to say that this, the proof has been done in 1+1, and for any alpha larger than zero and CSS squared larger or greater than zero, this instability exists. I mean, either this or the other one.
I mean,
always. Yes. And this proof is constructive. So we don't know when it blows up. We don't know what is the profile, basically. We don't know basically anything about it, but you can prove that it happens. And the connection to cosmology is not clear yet. Maybe there are some interactions which become important and we neglect in this simplified setup. No, we don't see this instability in cosmology. Okay, so let me conclude. I hope I've convinced you that nonlinearities can become important, especially in light of future surveys. I showed that the linear predictions and halo fit are not accurate enough to study these kind of theories. And also the most promising probe is RSW-Riis-Sharma, which we can have 30% effect on angular power spectrum, and in the convergence map, like 7% effect. And on the small speed of sound limit, nonlinearities can become can play the most important role. And through cosmological experiments, by changing the speed of sound, we found that there is a limit for sound speed squared. CSS squared being larger than 10⁻⁴.7 do not lead to any instability. However, from mathematical point of view, any speed of sound leads to an instability. The connection between these two is not clear yet. And in general, the effective fit theory of KSNs breaks down. Most probably, the same would be for the KGB and other scenarios. And so the question that arises here is that whether the EFT expansion has a problem. So we had to include more terms into the equations to remove this instability, or it's the hint of a strong field regime, for example, a black hole formation we will have, but we couldn't analyze because our simulations are in weak field. And so to answer one of the questions, which is expansion, EFT expansion problem, we need to study one covariant case since fully, like without any approximations, to see if that also blows up or not. Thanks. So this one.
Thank you very much. Okay, so question number 1. For Herbert. We have quite a few here. Someone on Zoom wants to ask questions. Okay, so if not, we can probably have an answer.
There is a question, I think.
So I'm still a little curious about this 4.7 number. Do you think like that specific threshold, does that depend on like your choice of W or H naught or something for your simulation, like something relative to which?
Right, that's a very good question. And actually the reason that it took us like 2 years to have this paper out was basically because of that, because we wanted to understand whether it's a real instability or how much it does depend on the resolution of simulations and et cetera. So there is a simple argument you can make. I hope I find it. Okay, so okay, I can't find it now. I just have to think. But the thing is, if you change W naught, basically, this CSS squared is not super sensitive to W naught. So CSS limit of CSS maybe just changes from 10⁻⁴.7 to 4.2. Another interesting question is that because we stopped the simulation at redshift 0, so it's the current time. If you continue the simulations to infinity, what happens? Does this limit change? The answer is no, because of dark energy domination. The potential wells completely decay, and as a result, the perturbations decay. And the limit wouldn't change if you continue the simulation to the future. And we have tested for a couple of other things, like if you increase the resolution, et cetera. So we think that exists. So
it's a fundamental number.
Yeah, it's a fundamental number. Maybe I would say like it's an EFD number. Maybe if we continue the expansion to higher orders, would change.
The thing is that this might be related to the real velocity of halo. Or just the not potential fluctuations, but 10⁻⁵ is the amplitude of potential as well as the halo. So basically, if your halos are deeper than that, then you could, gases would fall into it to cross. But if the halos are not very deep, then gases doesn't follow with just different statically. So it seems that basically, if it's too cold, basically like cold dark matter, it would cut all that then cross and fall apart. But if it's hot, then it just it seems that it could be related to the amplitude of the dimension.
That's
my guess. I think it's a good question. I think that can have more perturbations in general. That's
good point. Yeah, I think we have tested that actually. Yes. By increasing resolution, you actually increase the amplitude of perturbations because you are looking at smaller scales. You pick the different range of power spectrum initially.
Right.
Yeah, so it's a bit.
Yeah, potential for a metric perturbation, not.
But the gravitational potential is being constructed from matter initially.
I think it's actually.
I see.
Over 15 minutes.
Okay.
Should we just
continue the discussion?
Correct. Can do the discussion over lunch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
okay.
Sure.
Let's thank people on Zoom and thank everyone here for staying. Thanks, Barbara.